We do the research, filter out the crap, add some opinion, and fire it up for you on the drive home. Headlines start now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 Headlines, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Spring into Audi sales event is on. Get rates starting at 0.9% and credit up to $9,750 off on select models.
Coming up this hour, we'll hear from Dan Shulman from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball as well. He's working the Rogers, or the work of the Rogers, working the Sportsnet broadcast of Blue Jays baseball this week. And from Sportsnet, Chris Johnston will join us coming up about 4:45. But we cut into his time, and he gets grumpy when we do that. Wilmo with today's headlines.
Rob, game number 4 in Nashville tonight as the Preds and Sharks do battle. The Preds trailed this series 2-1, and they've played every other day since April 15th when the Western Conference first round began against the Anaheim Ducks. And many believe that perhaps fatigue catching up to the Preds, especially the way game 1 went, where they allowed 5 goals in the third period to lose that game 5-2. They lost game 2 as well, but they bounced back with a 4-1 victory in game 3 on Tuesday at home, and tonight they'll do that again as game 4 goes at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. With a win, they can even up the series at 2 games apiece, and if you ask goaltender Pekka Rinne, well, the Preds feeling pretty good right now despite being down in this series.
I feel comfortable and confident with our game. Like I said, yeah, game 2 and 3 especially, we played really strong games, and it's a good matchup. Two good teams going at it, and they have a really good team, and we're playing really well right now. So it's a good situation, and really big game for both teams. So I feel like we're in a good place right now.
The Sharks were the best team in the NHL on the road during the regular season. They're 3-1 so far during the Stanley Cup playoffs away from home. So it should be an interesting matchup tonight as the Preds try to even up the series at 2 games apiece.
Well, San Jose's only the best team in the National Hockey League away from home this year, right?
Yeah.
Best road record. They are, not going to – I don't think they're going to fall back. I don't think they're going to be intimidated. I don't think they're going to be struggling with anything. I think, they'll be fine to go tonight. To me, it comes back to Nashville again, the Predators. And, we talked about it heading into Game 3. I hadn't seen much from them. Certainly like their I shouldn't say that. They didn't have results. Their game 2 was good, but they lost it. And to me, that was dangerous because you take a punch to the nose and you don't put a team down. That can be very dangerous. Tonight, they gotta keep up. They got to push it. I just, 3-1, I don't buy it. I mean, I just don't see, especially going back to San Jose, this has got to be a Predator, and Predators maybe need to win this one again like they did the last one by 3 goals.
Game time, 7 o'clock from Nashville. You can watch it on Sportsnet West. We'll join it in progress following the Blue Jays and Rangers right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Heading into tonight's Game 4 with the St. Louis Blues, the biggest question facing the Dallas Stars continues to be which goaltender gets the start, and will they be able to give their team a chance to win that game? The last 2 games, that answer has been no to both questions, as Kari Lehtinen was pulled in Game number 2. Antti Niemi pulled after Game number 3, after both allowed 3 goals in quite quick succession. A blowout loss in game number 3, and head coach Lindy Ruff expecting much more from his group tonight in game 4.
I thought we embarrassed ourselves with some of our play. So the answer to your question is, yeah, I don't want to lose 6-1. The result is the same, but the pain is greater. And maybe we needed that. Maybe, if it's only 3-1, we might have thought, like, I didn't think we played. I said in the earlier games that we played well. We didn't play well last game. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We didn't play well. Didn't play well enough to win. We deserve to lose 6-1 the way we played.
Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi had a near-even split in the regular season. Each has played their fair amount in the postseason, but it appears Ruff will be once again switching his starting goaltenders. Kari Lehtinen first off the ice at optional skate this morning, and he appears to be your Dallas Stars starter for tonight. Forwards Tyler Seguin and Patrick Eaves both back on the ice for the third consecutive day, but Ruff says both non-available for Game 4 tonight.
I have been derelict in my duties here in the last couple of days, and I have not mentioned this, so I'll bring it up now. Ryan Reeves might have done something that evens up this series, and maybe he didn't, But Ryan Reeves, who's a really tough customer for the Blues in that last game, blew a kiss at the old Dallas Stars bench. Players kind of seething about that, as they should. He's one of those guys that I think, you know, you're not going to intimidate Ryan Reeves, so I don't think he cares too much if the Dallas Stars didn't like it. But will it ignite the Stars? To me, Dallas has got to overcome the fact they've got two guys in right now that are shaky at best, and who do you have faith in them? Do you trust your goaltenders? But did Ryan Reeves give you an alternative place to focus your energy? Do you now put, you know, the old bulletin board material? Is, you know, is Jamie Benn, the captain of the Dallas Stars, going to stand up and step up and, you know, say, guys, we got to shove it down his throat? I don't know. But we haven't talked too much about it. It certainly has been played up in that series. Curious if that plays a role tonight.
Puck drop, 6 o'clock, and you can watch that one on CBC. Off the ice and away from the playoffs, the Arizona Coyotes named John Chayka their 8th general manager in team history, and Gary Drubman goes as named as president of hockey operations earlier today. Chayka has been the assistant GM with the Coyotes since the start of last season. He was involved in hockey operations, including the NHL, minor leagues, and player development as well with the Coyotes, and he talked about getting the opportunity to be a general manager in the National Hockey League at age 26.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm thrilled, and I'm just grateful for the opportunity. But I think, you know, the one thing that you hit on that I think is important is it's a real positive time for this organization. It's an exciting time to be an Arizona Coyote. I think just with the structure we're putting in place, with some of the initiatives that we're going to have for our players, and the group of players that we have, you know, right now and coming, it's exciting. And so certainly for me, to come in and step into this situation is a blessing.
Chayka was the director of hockey operations and co-founder of Stathletes Incorporated, which was developed in 2009. And it was a hockey analytics firm that, of course, prior to joining the Arizona Coyotes before the start of last season. The Coyotes also announced a 5-year contract extension agreement with head coach Dave Tippett. He will also serve as executive VP of hockey operations. He'll be involved in all hockey personnel decisions. Drummond's role will be to ensure communication and collaboration within the department and serve as a catalyst for ensuring an alignment of vision and objectives between ownership, management, coaches, and Arizona's core players. Tippett has been the head coach of the Coyotes since 2009-2010.
Don't give two hoots about his age, John Chayka. Don't. He's 26. Good for him. He'll turn 27 in the spring. You know, I've seen young guys, you know, excel, given early responsibility. I think often we forget about it, and we play sports at such a high level. Seems to me, in some of the most important things we do in terms of, you know, on the world stage, serving in the military, you're asking young men to go out and lead. I think it can be done. I'm not worried about his age. What I am intrigued by is how this system works. Mm-hmm. He has only been in professional hockey for less than a calendar year. General manager's job is more than just, you know, picking players. That's part of it. You run that team, at least the way we traditionally understand that role. Now, Dave Tippett, does he become more of a de facto head coach GM like Daryl Sutter way back in 2003 and to 2006, I believe it was, you know, the old school, and you know, he carries more of the weight. Who answers the phone at the draft table when somebody calls and wants to move up and make a trade with the Coyotes? Is that Chayka? Is that Tippett? I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's good. I'm fascinated. I have a lot of questions about it. I eagerly wait to see if it works. I don't have, and I'm not blowing smoke here. I don't know if it works. I don't know if it won't work. It may very well be the thing. But I think the bigger story here is how that hockey operations group is going to function and who has what role. Dave Tippett's been around the game for an awful long time. Mm-hmm. He is not a dummy. And for him to agree to stay for 5 more years, when you and I both know, here's if the Calgary Flames were looking for a coach and Dave Tippett wasn't in with the Coyotes, he'd be in that list. You can bet. He'd be one of the guys interviewed for sure. He can get employment elsewhere. Clearly, he thinks that this can work. The age, couldn't care less about the age. I just want to see how they work together. I also want to know how much input, you know, ownership's going to have. Anthony LeBlanc, who's had a very strong voice since joining that organization, and you know, was the man we heard from when Don Maloney was let go.
Mm-hmm.
What's his role? You talked about, you know, part of it was a liaison. Part of it is being a liaison between the team and ownership, which there needs to be. You can't operate in a vacuum, but how much of a role does ownership have in this? Fascinating to me. Just fascinating.
Gary Drummond, by the way, who is the president of hockey operations and a co-owner along with Anthony LeBlanc, he announced today at the press conference that the Coyotes are still seeking to hire seasoned veteran front office personnel to be the assistant GM and help with decisions there. So, not
I wonder
done
if
yet.
That was Les Jackson all along.
Yeah.
You know, and we heard Les Jackson's name, and Les, longtime Dallas star executive and very, very, very highly thought of. Initially, we wondered, you know, if he was a candidate for the general manager's job. I wonder if that's what they were looking for, if they wanted him to come over and do his same role for them that he was doing for Dallas. And I don't blame him if he didn't go. He, you know, that was always the Nil, Jim Nil and Steve Yzerman and all those bodies around Kenny Holland in Detroit. No interest in going on a lateral, only interested in a promotion. And I wonder if at the end of the day that Les Jackson was ever really given the opportunity to interview for the general manager job in Arizona.
So that is what's happening with the Arizona Coyotes as they reshuffle or shuffle up their front office, and John Chayka becomes the GM, the eighth GM in Coyotes franchise history. Jaromír Jágr will be back for 2016-17. He signs a one-year deal today with the Florida Panthers worth $4 million as a base salary and also games played bonuses that could add up to $1.8 million. The announcement comes just 11 days after the Panthers saw their season come to an end with a 2-1 double OT loss to the Islanders in game 6 of the first round.
He did nothing to dissuade you that he shouldn't come back. Here I am telling you not to worry about John Chayka being just 26. I'm telling you not to worry about Jaromír Jágr being 44. They signed him a one-year deal. Perfect. They didn't give him 6. They're not playing him until he's 50. He's a draw down there. He's good around your kids. You know, if you can pay him $4 million and it's not going to tap you out somewhere else, if you're the Panthers, go for it.
That is the sixth consecutive one-year contract signed by Jaromír Jágr, by the way, since returning back to the NHL in 2011.
That's the way to do it.
Absolutely.
With older guys above 35, that's the way to do it. We talked about David Backes yesterday, right? Backes is having – he's 32.
Yeah.
But you don't want to give David Backes 7 years.
Right.
You'd give David Backes 2 years and then work off a one-year deal.
Jágr did lead the Panthers in scoring with 66 points. While Team Canada will begin the World Championships tomorrow for 2016, and they named their captain today, it is Corey Perry of the Anaheim Ducks, and he was asked by our sister station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto, when the last time he was a team captain at any level of hockey.
It's been a long time. It's probably back in minor hockey, all the way back then. I mean, so there's been some great players I've had the privilege to play with, and you know, it's been a while, but I'm very thankful and very honored.
Perry also added in that conversation much and very high praise for Connor McDavid. He's excited to play with him, and the tournament begins tomorrow as Canada will play the U.S. in their opener of that tournament.
I'm looking forward to it. I really am kind of looking forward to it, and Austin Matthews, McDavid, the American team is such an interesting young team. You know, Canada's defending champions. You know, the Russians want to do well. Something I dig about this time of year and being able to watch some good hockey early in the morning.
The Toronto Blue Jays back in action tonight. They wrap up a four-game series with the Texas Rangers at the Rogers Centre. The Blue Jays lost the first game of this series, but they've since bounced back to win consecutive games via the walk-off, and the Blue Jays still a game below .500. The offense still not even close to where they want it to be at this point in the season, or where many expected it to be at this point in the season. Dan Schulman of ESPN and Sportsnet talked about one guy specifically he's watching and who needs to get going if the Blue Jays want to turn things around offensively.
You know, Tulowitzki's the big guy. I mean, when Tulowitzki hits, the lineup is really long. And I see him taking a lot of pitches. I see him, it just feels like it's in his head a little bit, like he's really beating himself down because things aren't going well. They dropped him from 5 to 6. I think Martin's going to be okay. I mean, he's hitting the ball to right field, which is what he's very good at. I think he's going to be fine. But the big one is Tulowitzki, and I don't think they know what to do to get him going. For a guy who's had so much success, it really seems like he's fighting himself right now.
Toronto seeking their third straight victory. Jay Happ on the mound. Derek Holland will oppose him for Texas.
So what do you think? Are we seeing the, you know, are we sitting here waiting for the bats to get on fire when maybe we should just realize that John Gibbons is going to have to come up with a different way? I mean, to Dan Schulman's point, he said it right off the top. I watched that game, and at the end he said grind. The last couple of games, it's May, you shouldn't be grinding, but they're grinding. Maybe it's not sustainable to play it this way, but we all sat here waiting for them to hit the leather off the ball or hit the hide off the ball, whatever you want to say. I apologize because I can't remember what the baseball terminology is for it, but they're not. They're not playing long ball right now. They're playing a version of small ball. Not true small ball because they're not stealing a lot, but are we talking about a team that maybe just isn't going to be what it was last year and is going to have to win games differently?
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. And I thought his point about the 900 runs is one thing, because there were a lot of guys that maybe not career years for the Blue Jays last year, but right. Certainly a lot of guys that, you know, their numbers were very inflated. And I don't know if you can ask them to do that year in, year out. But the Blue Jays are still going to score runs. And I think that, you know, it is only 6-7 weeks into the season. They should be able to figure it out at some point, but certainly, you know, as Schulman said in that conversation too, I mean, you look at it right now, Rob, and there's not really anything that shows you evidence that, you know, they're on the cusp of breaking out. They're still not really showing any signs of ending this drought offensively. And to me, that's the biggest concern, because sometimes when a team is struggling, you're going, okay, well, they're still hitting the ball hard. They're just hitting it right at guys. And, you know, the BABIP is still really high. But at this point right now, there's not a lot of signs that this team is really going to turn it around offensively. And that, to me, is concerning.
But they do take a lot of walks.
Yeah.
Right?
They do, yeah. They're looking at a lot of pitches.
So maybe you do something to put a little more speed on the base path. Right?
Yeah. Either way,
I don't know if they have. Do they have it?
No, they don't. And, you know,
okay.
They don't have.
Well, there is that part.
Yeah.
To it.
I mean, you know, they have. Kevin Pillar can steal bases, but he's not a guy that you're looking at going, yeah, you know, he can steal three bags for you in a series.
Yeah, yeah. No. I hear you.
5:07 first pitch, by the way. You can watch it on Sportsnet 1. We'll pick it up at 6 right here on Sportsnet 960. And the final quick story on headlines today. I know you and Pat talked about it earlier, but the Raptors hoping to get Kyle Lowry going tonight. They're going to try and even up their series with the Miami Heat in round 2 at 1 game apiece. Game 2 from the ACC in Toronto. Tip off at 6 o'clock.
Do you agree with my premise earlier when I was talking to Pat that if the Raptors don't make it to the Eastern Conference Final, there's going to be a lot of frustrated people because Lowry and DeRozan have not been what they should be, what they're capable of being. And we keep spending, especially after losses, talking about the Raptors' two stars as needing to give more and be more. And it's disappointing. And I wonder if, you know, almost like we're talking about the offense of the Jays, that if those guys just start clicking, does it get easier for these guys? Because, man, even their wins are hard.
Yeah, I mean, certainly those are the two guys you're looking at, and obviously the two guys that jump out to you right away. And I think that, you know, there's a couple of things for me. One, I still think I'm fascinated to wait and see what happens when the season eventually ends. But I'm still convinced that elbow issue we saw late in the year with Kyle Lowry is still really, really hurting him. And we'll see how much they reveal in the offseason. But I think that's still a big issue for him. And the other one with DeMar DeRozan, to me, is a guy that, you know, he's got a contract expiring. He wants max money. He wants to be paid like a superstar. Well, maybe it's time to start playing like a superstar in this series and put the team on your back, because that's the thing. He knows his teammate and his best buddy Kyle Lowry is struggling. I think it's time DeMar DeRozan goes out and proves everybody he deserves that money if he truly wants it.
If Lowry's truly hurt, though, is he out after games for 2 hours taking shots afterwards?
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point.
Right?
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, because you're looking. We're looking, right?
Right.
You'd like to excuse it away.
Yeah.
Good job, Will. Appreciate this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
All right, Dan Schulman from ESPN Radio and Sportsnet. Jays broadcast coming up next a little later on. Chris Johnston from Sportsnet.ca. Thanks to everybody who's come down and saying hello to us today. We're here at South Street Burger Company. Invite you to come down. We're going to be here till 6 o'clock. They're going to be open far beyond that. Their new location, their brand new location, 17th Avenue Southeast on and just off of Stony Trail. It's a brand new big power center. Come on in. You can grab a beer. It's Cinco de Mayo. You can grab a little Corona. You can grab a burger. They'll make it the way you want it. And everything you spend, they are going to match today and donate to the Red Cross to help with Fort McMurray relief. We'll come back, talk some baseball with Dan Schulman on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 headlines brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Spring Into Audi sales event is on. Get rates starting at 0.9% and credit up to $9,750 off on select models.
Talking Blue Jays right now. The Big Show, Sportsnet 960.
Sportsnet 960 Baseball Insider Dan Schulman is brought to you by SML Entertainment, specializing in pool tables and hot tubs since 1956 with five Alberta locations. Go to smlentertainment.com for details.
Right now, always a pleasure to spend some time with our next guest from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. And this week, he's been working at Sportsnet, calling the Jays Texas series. Dan Schulman joins us this afternoon. Mr. Schulman, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Excellent. I want to start right off by picking up on a word you used last night at the conclusion of the broadcast, which is grinding out wins. That's certainly what the Jays have done here in the last couple of games against Texas.
Absolutely. I mean, they have not been the juggernaut this year that they were last year, and it seems like for most of every game, they're down a run, and then they have found a way to win the last two in the late innings. It can take a lot out of you, but if you're going to grind that hard, you may as well at least win them, and it could serve them well later on. It's a different season and it's a different situation, and right now they're not able to pummel people like they did. I still would like to see them execute a little better. You know, there have been some base running mistakes, some guys haven't gotten bunts down, they're not getting guys in from third. Those things are going to have to get better if they're going to continue winning close games.
So if I'm a casual observer, Dan, should I be looking at this as a, you know, waiting for the bats to come around, or is it possible that that's just, as you say, it's a new season, it's a new team. Is that, you know, way of playing, the way of winning last year gone, and they're going to play more like this?
Well, I think the truth will probably be somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure we can expect them to score 900 runs again. I mean, everybody had great seasons, and not everybody is going to have a great season. You know, they've got to get Tulowitzki going, and Bautista hasn't hit a whole lot lately, although he had an RBI single. I think the real measure of this team is somewhere between what we're seeing now and somewhere what we saw last year. You know, the starting pitching's been really good, the bullpen so-so, and the offense so-so. And I think there will probably be a whole lot more 3-2 and 4-3 games this year than there were last year.
Is there anybody that you noticed, Russ Martin, for instance? I mean, that was big for him last night. But is anybody beginning to work, you know, get out of a funk? Any of the guys we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks?
Well, you know, the guys who have hit well, Pilar looks good, and Saunders looks good, and Barney in limited bats looks good, and obviously Donaldson looks good. But not huge signs. You know, maybe Encarnacion hitting the home run, because he hadn't done a whole lot lately. That'll help him. You know, Tulowitzki's the big guy. I mean, when Tulowitzki hits, the lineup is really long. And I see him taking a lot of pitches. I see him, it just feels like it's in his head a little bit, like he's really beating himself down because things aren't going well. They dropped him from 5-6. I think Martin's going to be okay. I mean, he's hitting the ball to right field, which is what he's very good at. I think he's going to be fine. But the big one is Tulowitzki, and I don't think they know what to do to get him going. For a guy who's had so much success, it really seems like he's fighting himself right now.
Found out this week the decision to go to a platoon, Goins and Barney at second base. What do you make of that?
I think it's a good move. I mean, I'm a huge Ryan Goins fan, but he's not swinging the bat very well right now. And Darwin Barney's a capable player, and he's a right-handed bat. So to have Barney in there for a few games against lefties to see how he does, absolutely. Barney won a gold glove with the Cubs in 2012. He's a terrific defender. I think right now the best situation for the Blue Jays at second base is to platoon them.
Dan Schulman, our guest here on The Big Show. Pat?
Dan, we're getting set for a really important day for Tim Lincecum as his showcase goes tomorrow. Around 20 Major League Baseball teams will go out and work him out. How much interest is there, though, beyond tomorrow in Tim Lincecum around the league?
Well, that'll be determined by what they see tomorrow. There will be 20 scouts there with radar guns. And if it says 85, I don't think there's going to be much interest. If it says 89 or 90, then I think there's a chance there will be interest. You know, the saying, you can never have enough pitching, that saying exists for a reason. And I think somebody will probably take a flyer on him, but I don't think anybody knows what they're going to see. I mean, he's had hip injuries and shoulder injuries, and the velocity's way down from where he was at his peak. And I don't know. I think we need to take a wait-and-see approach. You know, the notion of him coming back and being anything close to the Lincecum of 6-7 years ago when he won a couple of Cy Youngs, to me, that's not going to happen. Maybe he can help somebody out of a bullpen or something like that, but I think everybody needs to see what he shows at that session tomorrow.
What does history tell us, and I guess what does your gut tell you? Is he still potentially an effective major leaguer in some sort of role?
If he's thrown reasonably hard. I don't think he can do it at 85, 86. If he's at 89, 90, mm-hmm. then I think it's possible. Can it be as a starter? I don't know. I don't know if he can fool people three times around in the lineup. You know, he did have one year where he was out of the rotation for the Giants, I think 2012, and pitched extremely well out of the bullpen in the postseason. But again, you know, until we know what he shows, until the guys with the radar guns tell us what they see tomorrow, I'm not sure anybody can make an accurate guess.
So let's say tomorrow goes okay for Lincecum. Do you see a potential fit being there with Toronto?
Not really, to be honest with you. And I know the Blue Jays are supposedly on the list of teams that are going to see him. You know, who would he replace in the rotation? So definitely not as a starter with Toronto. Maybe as a reliever, but is he going to be better than some of the guys they have in middle relief right now? I think the most likely role for him is either as a starter on a team that really is hurting for starting pitching, or is like a multiple-inning middle reliever, and the Blue Jays don't need that kind of a guy.
Dan, seems like most eyes are on the highly anticipated series this weekend between the Cubs and the Nationals. So many eyes will be focused on it over the weekend. Just before we get into the matchup itself, just a thought on what has been a historic start for the Cubbies.
It really has been. I think they've outscored their opponents by like 93 runs or something crazy like this. And I mean, they just beat a very good Pittsburgh team soundly. They outscored them, I think it was 20-5 in the three games. And they've got great talent, a great manager, a very strong farm system. You know, they picked up Jason Hayward, who's a good player. They picked up John Lackey, who's a proven veteran pitcher. And I think the quietest one of the three, I think Ben Zobrist was a great pickup for them because he's a good guy in the clubhouse. He's a veteran. He's been on winning teams. He's a switch hitter. He can play like six different positions. Whatever you need, he'll give you. And I think the Cubs are legit. I picked them to win the World Series before the season, which doesn't make me any different than half the people who were picking because a lot of people think they're great. But, you know, Arrieta is as good as last year, and that's huge. The bullpen has been very good. And Bryant and Rizzo have a chance to be as good a 3-4 combo as there is in baseball for the next 10 years. I love those two guys.
When you take a look at the matchup, these two teams will face each other with winning percentages over 700. First time two teams have faced this good this late in the season since 2002. How do you handicap this matchup?
I think the Cubs are a better team. Washington, and I really believe Washington is a very good team, but they had an extraordinarily easy month of April. They played a lot of Marlins, a lot of Phillies, and I know the Phillies have a good record right now, and they actually swept Washington in a series, a lot of Atlanta and some of the other weaker teams. I think Washington's schedule has been easier. I think Chicago's a better team, but you know, in a short series, anything can happen. Like I said, the Phillies just swept the Nationals. I mean, crazy stuff happens in baseball, much more so than in any sport. But this will be a good litmus test for both teams, because right now they sure appear to be the two strongest teams in the National League.
Dan, let's talk a little bit about Sunday Night Baseball, because it's the second week in a row you get the same opponents, but different venue.
Different venue, different pitchers as well. Luis Severino will start for the Yankees, a guy I think they thought would be their number two starter going into the season, and just 22 years of age, but he was so good last year. But his ERA is over 6 this year, and by all accounts, it appears sometimes as if he's a little bit nervous or flustered on the mound. The phrase you hear from Yankee people is the game's speeding up on him. They're trying to help him slow it down. And Stephen Wright starts for the Red Sox, who's a knuckleballer. He and R.A. Dickey are the only two knuckleballers in Major League Baseball right now. And Wright's been the best starter for Boston. I mean, David Price has not done all that well. So it's, you know, the Yankees had a good game last night, finally broke out, scored 7 runs, but A-Rod's on the DL. And boy, they're just counting so heavily on so many guys, older players who are not performing well right now. The Yankees are better than they've been, but I don't think they're good enough to be a contender.
Dan Schulman from Sunday Night Baseball. Of course, is the Yankees hosting the Red Sox on Sunday, and I think he's working the game tonight, the Jays. We're going to have that one for you. Texas and Toronto will join it in progress coming up at 6 o'clock. And then after that, we'll join San Jose and Nashville in progress. Two NHL playoff games tonight. Dallas and St. Louis with the Blues up 2-1. And the Sharks leading Nashville 2-1. Live South Street Burger Company. Come on and Say hello. Lots of Raj came down and his family. They came down and said hello. We've had some other guys pop in and say hello. It's always cool to say hello to the people that listen to this station, because without you, we are clearly nothing. That goes without saying. We would love you to come down on our behalf and say hello to Brian and the staff here at South Street Burger Company. 17th Avenue is southeast, just off of Stony, brand-new location, only been open a month. They'll take awfully good care of you. And they are going to match all of the sales today and donate it to the Red Cross for relief efforts in Fort McMurray. We here at Rogers are also encouraging, if you'd like to donate $10 directly from your phone, all you need to do is text the word FIRES, F-I-R-E-S, to 45678. That's FIRES, F-I-R-E-S, to 45678. You can also visit mymcmurray.com for updates and more information as it happens. When we come back, Chris Johnston from Sportsnet will join us later on. Mark Crawford and Cassie Campbell-Pascal. Murray, I may as well throw it all in there. Murray Sigler is going to join us from Sport Calgary. He wrote an op-ed piece in the Calgary Herald. You know what? We need a field house. We need it now. It's all coming up here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The big insiders, the big controversies, the big debates. Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show, Sportsnet 960.
NHL insider Chris Johnston, brought to you by GSL GM City, home of the $499 Cadillac SRX all-wheel drive. GSL GM City.
Well, Chris, it's never dull in the old National Hockey League. We've got some terrific series going on in the second round of the playoffs, but teams making some news off the ice this week, including the Calgary Flames, who are in search for a new coach. And I will ask you for an update on that if you've heard anything in a second, but I want to talk about the big news out of Arizona. A new general manager. Now, the headline's easy to jump on. He's only 26 years old, but to me, it's the structure of their hockey operations department that I'm intrigued by. What do you make of the hiring of John Chyka today?
Well, it's an outside-the-box hiring, that's for sure, and it's one that's gotten the Coyotes a lot of attention. I'm here in Washington covering the series and was just watching ESPN, and they were debating it on Around the Horn or Pardon the Interruption or one of those programs. And man, that's got to be the first time the Coyotes have ever been discussed on that kind of platform. So, you know, I'm not as against it as some. I mean, there's a lot of skepticism out there, I'll tell you. And you know, even from some in the analytics community themselves who don't know a lot about John Chyka, the new GM of the Coyotes. But, you know, I do think that this is the wave is a real thing, that there is some advantages to be gained. And, you know, we're going to have to learn a little bit more about him before, you know, I have grave concerns about the direction of this franchise.
It's, to me, I'm wondering a little bit about Dave Tippett's role in all of this. He gets the 5-year extension, and he's going to, you know, have some say, obviously, a kind of an adjusted portfolio. Is it more like Patrick Waugh, what we see in Colorado, or is it a little bit of a throwback to, you know, I think the last time Daryl Sutter's the last full-time head coach general manager in the NHL, but if it wasn't him, it was Pat Quinn. I'm wondering if it's kind of a harken back to that in his role now.
Well, given how little experience the GM has in this case, I see it more as almost like a split role for Tip, but I think he'll be very, very involved in what's going on there. And you know, he does, you know, he's been around the block a few times in National Hockey League and knows, you know, how things have to work, you know, in this league. So, I think we have to almost wait to see how it shakes out here. They're going to hire another assistant, they say, and presumably someone with a bit more experience than John Chyka has, you know, working for an NHL team and you know, find a way to make it work together. But, you know, I will say in general, NHL front offices have moved far more to collaborative structures than in the past. It's not, in too many situations, it's not just one guy making decisions. There's a lot of voices in the room and consensus has to be part of that process.
How involved do you think or are you perceiving ownership in this? Because I believe the new president of hockey operations is also one of the part owners of the team, isn't he?
He is, yes. And, that, you know, that's unusual. Let's face it. I mean, the Coyotes have always done things a little differently. Some of it's been by necessity. And you know, this is where people, I think, are raising their eyebrows, that an owner is essentially in charge of hockey operations. The coach is probably technically above the GM with his vice president's title, and then the GM is 26 years old and, you know, only has 1 year of assistant GM on his resume in the NHL. And I think that's where the eyebrows are being raised and where people are wondering how that structure is going to work. But, you know, I'm approaching it with a bit more of an open mind because, you know, sometimes titles, I think, can be a bit overrated. And, you know, as long as these guys can find a way to work in some level of harmony and you know, that doesn't devolve into a power struggle, but then, you know, I still think it can work.
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe you and I in a previous season had a conversation one time when you came on with us and just talking about how hockey operations departments are evolving. That, you know, it was only a couple of years ago that the presidents of hockey operations seemed to be the new fad, kind of pushing the structure up, moving from the general manager. I'm like you. I'm going to take a wait and see. I just think this is another evolution of how teams organize their staff.
Well, you know, I'm based in Toronto, and there's a lot of concern expressed, especially in the local market. How possibly can Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock and Brendan Shanahan, all these sort of big ego, powerful guys, work together? And, you know, from what I've seen there, it's a bit of a non-traditional setup. I mean, anytime a coach has an eight-year deal, for example, and, you know, the first year of that, you know, to my eyes, and as I say, I'm quite close to that organization, has gone well. And I do think that there has been an evolution here, and GMs in a lot of cases have lost a degree of power from where they, you know, really used to be the arbiters of everything that happened with their teams. And, you know, the reality for John Shaka is he's getting that title, but, you know, he's not a full GM in the traditional sense of the word. And he does have bosses and a couple of them to answer to and to work with. And, you know, as I say, I don't have as much concern too, because he's been there for a year. And then, you know, obviously to make the move to get rid of Don Maloney, there's a comfort level between Dave Tippett built in and with ownership and John Shaka. So, you know, it's just not out of the realm of possibility that it works, because at the end of the day, I mean, analytics, we could debate up and down, but, you know, it's the teams that are on a budget that have to look for, you know, small ways to gain an advantage or to get an edge that should, you know, I think in my mind be most aggressively using these sorts of things. And obviously the Coyotes fall into that pile, and they've got a young organization with lots of pretty good prospects. And, you know, I think it makes sense for them to kind of go all in on this initiative and see if they can be a bit of a money ball team sort of in you know, in the NHL.
I'll say this, and the last comment on this, and we'll move on, I promise, but Buffalo will be interesting. Who answers the phone when it rings at the table? If somebody wants to move up or move down, who answers that phone at the table will be kind of telltale of where this is going.
Well, and especially depending on who that other assistant that they end up hiring is. I mean, if it's someone who's worked in the league for 20 years and has the relationships with other GMs or AGMs, I mean, I would imagine that person, you know, is spearheading some of the trade discussions or you know, negotiations on those sorts of things. So you're right. It's going to be very telling. I think it's going to be an interesting draft on a lot of fronts. But, you know, I'm kind of excited just to see how this works out, frankly. I mean, we haven't seen this in hockey, anything quite like it. In baseball, there's been a lot of young executives. I believe Theo Epstein was 28 when he was first hired by the Boston Red Sox, and he's had a lot of success. But this is kind of a new wave in hockey, and I know from talking to some analytics folks, they're really hoping it works out, because they're hoping it'll open up some doors for them and other markets.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our guest, joins us on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Before we get to the playoffs, anything you're hearing out in Washington, around there and out east, about the opening with the Calgary Flames?
I'll say it's been surprisingly quiet, at least as far as I can discern, that you know, all indications that this is still going to be a longer road. You know, I don't think that they're, you know, going in, at least as much as I've been able to tell, and trying to get some of the bigger names that are interviewing elsewhere. So right now I don't have anything too concrete, but just been asking around a bit, and it doesn't seem like there's too many talks formally happening just yet.
Chris, just one last one before we go to the playoffs, and that is Jaromir Jagr re-signs one-year deal with Florida. I don't think this is a surprise to anybody, and the length is right. He led them in scoring. Nice to have Jaromir Jagr coming back for at least one more year.
Well, and the value that he brings, I mean, to have 66 points this year and 27 goals, I mean, I think reasonably I would be stunned if he matched those totals next year, even with the same opportunities. He had some good shooting luck in Florida, but he brings a value to that organization. I mean, they did very well at the box office this year from where they were in the past. They were selling tickets, but clearly he's a marketable guy in a place that's still trying to sell hockey and still trying to gain more of a foothold in their market. And, you know, he gets some national attention. He just happens to be good. He's doing something historically, you know, virtually unparalleled. But you're right. No surprise he's back. The funny part of that contract, though, is that you know, it's $4 million in base salary and $1.5 million extra. He'll get in bonuses if he plays at least 45 games. But then there's a strange 15,000 he can earn for performance bonuses, and he gets $5,000 if he wins the Art Ross, $5,000 if he wins the Hart, and $5,000 if he wins the Stanley Cup. So at age 45, I guess he still believes that he maybe can win one of those major awards and earn an extra $5,000 at the end of a career where he's made about $150 million or so.
Well, the awards are one thing, but you win the Stanley Cup and you get $5,000 bonus. At least you'll get the player's share. Somehow, I think he'll be okay. I mean, he'll be okay, but the bonus structure is interesting.
I just think it's amusing that that even got negotiated in there. I mean, what would that conversation be like?
Well, but you know what it is? It's the Van Halen rider clause or something, right? Like, it can only have brown M&Ms or something. They just wanted to make sure the agent was paying attention.
Yeah, well, I found that amusing. Yager always finds a way to make you laugh when you're dealing with him, and he snuck another one in with his contract.
Your column up today at sportsnet.ca, are the Capitals still what we thought they were? Down 3-1 to the Pittsburgh Penguins, very easily could be tied, might even make a case they could be leading in this series, but they are not. And I know that every visit for the last week or so, I have brought up the name Matt Murray, but I have to go back there. He has been nothing short of stunning in this series.
Yeah, and really, as a pro hockey player the last 2 years, but this is getting to special territory. I mean, we have to kind of wait and see how this plays out. But, you know, I'm at the point personally where if he even, you know, stumbles and has a so-so game, I still wouldn't put Marc-Andre Fleury back in the net, you know, for the following game afterwards. I mean, I think he's earned a bit of leash here with his play. And you know, really, you know, there's just very little to pick apart with him. I mean, he's on the biggest stage. He made his first playoff start at Madison Square Garden. He's now up against the Capitals, who, you know, obviously have a lot of offensive weapons. And there's going to be moments in the games where they're getting dangerous chances. And, you know, he looks like he's been there before, even though, you know, basically he hasn't.
As far as the rest of this series goes out, last night, I mean, we talked about how nasty a series it's been. That continued. Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin got into it last night. Do you care to opine on that? I mean, Crosby, anytime something happens, we all watch him, and the great camera shot of him getting frustrated. Clearly not happy about getting slashed, but probably more upset about maybe possibly being hurt, right?
Yeah, he said afterwards, actually, that he was just concerned that he was done for the season, that he thought maybe there was some kind of break in his hand or, you know, something more serious. And after getting some treatment from the trainers, he was able to feel better. So I think the reaction really was due. He wasn't trying to draw a penalty in that moment or anything like that. I really believe he thought something bad had happened there. And fortunately for him, it didn't. And, you know, really, it sort of continued the storyline in my eyes. I mean, Alex Ovechkin's won some individual awards over Sidney Crosby, but, you know, Sidney's had the run of play in the major events, and, you know, it looks like as a team that Pittsburgh's well poised now to knock Washington out again. And my goodness, that'll be quite a blow for the Capitals. A lot of long faces in their dressing room last night after that loss.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, game day's tomorrow, or it's not today anyway, and I know you're there. Is there any sense of the foreboding that's there? Because that was really one of the undertones all year long, wasn't it, around the Capitals? We've seen this before, you know, prove it to us in the playoffs, not unlike the St. Louis Blues in the first round against Chicago.
Exactly. And then, you know, if they lose this year, if they lose game five, just for hypothetical, it's not, you know, I wouldn't say that they're done, but my goodness, they're going to have a lot of serious questions. I mean, and until we see the core group of those players, you know, deliver some big moments and some big victories, I mean, you're going to have doubt, natural doubt, that they can do it. And, you know, this series, you know, hasn't really been their best. I feel like some of the decisions that you know, have been made by Barry Trotz haven't always worked out. We haven't seen them, other than game three where they dominated and lost, they've probably been outplayed in three of the four games by Pittsburgh. And you know, there's a strange feeling, I guess, hanging over things. And, you know, I've been around these series enough to know that, you know, if Washington comes and delivers an emphatic victory in game five, it'll look quite a bit different if you go back to Pittsburgh. And, you know, they're not dead yet, but it certainly doesn't look good after a season where they had 120 points and, you know, really have built the best team of the Ovechkin era.
Last one for you, Chris, and it's another topic just kind of following up from Tuesday. We talked prior to that St. Louis-Dallas game about the need for somebody to stand up and take the goaltending reins in Dallas, and that didn't happen. That was as bad a goaltending performance as we've seen here in the postseason. Your thoughts on where Lindy Ruff and the Stars go to prepare for this one? Did they get and I'll guess I give you a little bit of ammunition here. Did they get possibly a little bit of help from Ryan Reeves blowing a kiss? I mean, is that where you rally this team around heading into game four?
Well, you got to start somewhere. I mean, I'm wondering who their number three goalie is and if he's going to be getting a call, you know, the way things are going at this point. But the Ryan Reeves stuff, I mean, it's funny. The side shows, I felt like, used to be a bit more part of the playoff series. And you know, by and large, we don't see it too much anymore. But Jamie Benn was sort of quipping on that Reeves blown kiss. And, you know, it could be, you know, something that helps out. I mean, look, they lost 6-1 as well in the last game. So, you know, that there won't be feeling very good about it. But, you know, goaltending is still the story, you know, in the big picture, I believe, for the Stars. And Kari Lehtinen, to me, has the better top end of Antti Niemi, but he can have some more precipitous down periods as well, you know, than his countrymen. And you know, there's a lot on his shoulders tonight to at least keep them in the series, but to allow them to get back to even. If you can just give them somewhat capable goaltending, you know, with the players they have offensively, they should be okay. But I think Lindy Ruff is pulling his hair out, and I can imagine the conversation, you know, no matter when the season ends, is going to be about trying to get a clear number one next year and not having this sort of rotational system.
Always good to talk to you, my friend. Enjoy your time in Washington. We will hook up with you next week.
Sounds good, Rob. Thanks, man.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet. You can read him online. He does a terrific job of covering, well, the series he's in, but the National Hockey League in general, and really happy to have him on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Live from South Street Burger Company, the new location, 17th Avenue Southeast off of Stony Trail. Come in and say hello. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, we've got all kinds of guests. We're going to hear from Cassie Campbell-Pascal. We're going to hear from Murray Sigler from Sport Calgary. But right around the corner, really excited to talk to Mark Crawford. Won a Stanley Cup with the Colorado Avalanche, coached, of course, the Vancouver Canucks, the Dallas Stars, and the LA Kings. Has spent the last 4 years over in Zurich, and this past year coached Austin Matthews. We'll talk to him about that experience, and we'll talk to him about how do you get better as a coach over in Europe. Lots to talk about with Mark Crawford around the corner, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.